D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan joined on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, by Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter. Teron, we spent the previous hour talking about multi-sport athletes, Cam Ward's background as a multi-sport athlete, and how that could help him in the long run. And doing your research about Cam Ward, getting to know Cam Ward and the people around Cam Ward, how did his multi-sport upbringing help him get to this point?
Yeah, it helps in a variety of ways. You look at the arm angles that he uses, you know, that's a little bit of a background baseball. But then, most importantly, one thing that continuously comes out about him is how he's comfortable in space and comfortable with people around him. And that's something that comes from playing basketball. He actually was a pretty good hooper back in high school, and that's something that helps, just that spatial awareness and just getting used to having people around you and moving in that tight, condensed area, right? Because, you know, you take it to the cup, you got to be able to get around people and, you know, find a way to get your shot up without it getting smacked into the stands. And that's something that he was able to do. So those are two areas that really helped him.
Teron, over at ESPN.com, there's a story where I'm not sure who wrote this story, to be perfectly honest with you, but they were looking for the best fits for the remaining free agents or trade candidates in the NFL. And the Titans end up on here with Kazir White, the linebacker, most recently, of the Arizona Cardinals. What can you tell us about Kazir White, and could you see a fit with the Titans if he decided that he liked Tennessee?
Yeah, well, that story was written by Matthew Bowen.
Yes, thank you.
And he looked at a fit for all teams. Kazir White, I remember him coming out, and he was a prospect, you know, that a lot of people liked. You know, he was, if I'm not mistaken, was it a second-round pick? Or late, man, it might have even been later.
He was a fourth-round pick in 2018.
Okay, there you have it right there, a fourth-round pick. Not the biggest guy. He's someone that, you know, you could blitz off the edge. He gives you a little something in coverage, but I don't think that's a move that the Titans need to make, to be honest with you. They got the younger guys there and you know, Cedric Gray as well as James Williams. So I think they'll be good there, and obviously Otis Reese. So to me, it's just more kind of like the same.
Now, Teron, a quick question for you before I ask about the Titans. You're a Met fan, right? And I know Willie's a Met fan. I know why Willie's a Met fan, because he's a New York guy. But I would assume if you're a Met fan, are you a Knick fan too? And I wanted to ask Willie this too, like, because I hadn't heard him say anything about the Knicks. And the Knicks have found themselves in the Eastern Conference Final. So are y'all just both Mets fans and y'all could care less about, you know, the Knicks or any other team? I know y'all don't care about the Yankees, but like outside of other sports, you know, outside of baseball.
Yeah, you know, my first exposure to sports was the Mets. When I lived in New York, I was born in Queens, so naturally a Mets fan, and it just kind of dug into me, and I never let it go. Actually, a small fact about me is my first favorite football team was the Jets. I loved Al Toon and Freeman McNeil. And, you know, the Jets moved from Shea, like across the river to New Jersey. And I felt like I thought they abandoned, you know, me, you know what I mean? And so I hated the Jets. The Knicks, you know, I was, if there was a basketball team, like if I had to pick a team, it would probably be the Knicks, just because, you know, growing up, Bernard King was a guy that I really, really liked. And then Patrick Ewing. And then I was a Knicks fan, honestly, all the way through the Melo years. But then when they traded Melo, I was just really, really done with them. And so I said, you know, I don't have any other teams. The Mets are my team. That's the only team I'm going to root for, and that's where we are.
I'm similar to Teron. I moved out of the New York area when I was 12 to Orlando, Florida. That's where I went to high school. So over time, I kind of lost my affiliation to – at different amounts of time, because I grew up watching all the New York teams. That's all you could get. I didn't have cable TV, but all those New York teams were on TV, so I watched them a lot.
Yeah.
but I sort of lost interest over time with everybody other than the Mets. Mm-hmm. So, but the Mets were the one team I've always kept with me from my time that I left New York. So there was a time he mentioned Bernard King. I loved watching Bernard King in the in his heyday. But by the time I got to, like, it was weird, Orlando. Mm-hmm. We got the Magic as I was leaving to come here to Nashville.
Penny Hardaway, then Shaq.
So I had some interest in the Magic. So that's where you start moving in different directions in your life, and you sometimes lose affiliation to teams. So I have nothing against the Knicks. Mm-hmm. I like to see them do well, but I'm not a Knicks fan.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering because both y'all now know that both y'all were born, you know, in the New York area. So, but and this was a question that I posed to the guys via text. And we'll talk about it some other time. We look at Brian Callahan and we say, listen, this may be a lame duck year for him. And that's unfortunate in a sense of, you know, a lot of camp success may be riding on, camp success may be riding on whether he keeps his job or not. And maybe that's not the right way to approach it. And you've said that maybe, you know, keeping both of them and letting them develop together works well.
Yeah.
But outside of the head coach, which other position coach do you feel is on a hot seat?
I would say
in regards to the development of their position.
Yeah, I mean, you might as well just put it right to the quarterback coach or to the offensive coordinator. This offense has to do better. They were 17.6 points a game or something like that. It was bad last year. You know what I mean? And so, obviously, the defense has their warts, et cetera. But I would say, you know, Nick Holtz, Bo Hardigree, like, those guys are really under pressure because they're directly tied to Cam Ward. And so, it all revolves around number one, in my opinion. And as he goes, the franchise goes. So, anybody associated with him, those are the ones that, you know, they're on the grill.
So, I'm talking about a guy, even though – you know, I'm looking at the tight end position, and I'm thinking they need to get more out of this position because I think this is one of the positions that can, like, sort of behind the scene can really help Cam out if this tight end position really takes off and can be an integral part of what they want to do offensively.
Yeah, that's true, and I think a bit of that goes back to the quarterback coach, goes back to the offensive coordinator, because you look at this scheme, you know, it's not really designed for a tight end to have, you know, the 70 to 80 catches, 1,000 yards type of thing. Now, if it happens, that means, you know, a lot of things went right. But I think, you know, it's going to be up to the quarterback coach to help work to Bo Hardigree, to help Cam Ward, you know, to be able to get the ball there. It's going to be up to Nick Holtz and Brian Callahan together. And we talked about the seam routes when I was on last week with Adam, and Jake. Those seam routes, he likes to throw those, right? And so, you know, you got to incorporate that in there. And tight ends, athletic ones, you know, or ones that just know how to get open, or ones that are really tall, like the three guys that the Titans have, you know, in Okonkwo, athletic, Gunnar Helm, just knows how to get open, and Wiley, who's what, 6'6" or so, you know, these guys are built to be used on the seam, so you got to mix that in too.
Talking to Teron Davenport, and Teron, do you think now that they have a look at the rookies, they've got their undrafted free agents they're bringing to camp, are there any other late moves? And I realize that Joe Montana's not sitting on the street, right? You know, Too Tall Jones isn't sitting on the street. Anthony Munoz, but is there a guy or two out there they might now take a look at that at a position group that they think might be an extra guy that could be useful?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that they continue to mention about having a number one pick is also the value of being first in the waiver wire. So I tell you, there's going to be some look, June 1st, you always have the veterans that pop open, pop onto the market. So there could be something there. I don't, off the top of my head, see any ones that say, oh, yeah, that's a Titan signing of the remaining guys. But don't be surprised if there's one because they've already said they're going to be aggressive. And, again, they have their first in the waiver wire.
It seems like that is going to be an important mindset for Mike Borgonzi is along this pathway, if you can take advantage of that, every little thing that gives you an advantage as the team on the bottom, and that's one of them, first crack at the waiver wire, if you can just find a couple of hits, maybe not great players, but useful players, you're one mini step closer to being the type of roster you're looking for.
Yeah, I think the Commanders showed a good example of that last year, you know, with some of the guys they hit on. You know, Frankie Louvu, you know, obviously Jaden Daniels drafting him helped everything, but I think they showed how a series of smaller, less glamorous moves can add up to a big one when it all comes together and you find a new guy to drive your ship correctly, and I think that's what they had. The Titans have done some similar things, right? You know, signing Cody Barton, signing Draymond Jones, you know, bringing in those types of guys, Xavier Woods, and now they went out and they drafted, you know, Cam Ward. So we'll see how all that comes together. Every situation is different, so I'm not directly comparing that to the Commanders, but I think they're a good example of how you can make some small moves that could help out.
Teron, I know we've talked a lot about L'Jarius Sneed and whatever happened off the field, but I'm curious about just his health. Have you talked to him or have you gotten any reports about how he's coming along from the surgery that ended his season? Can we count on him to be healthy and ready to go when training camp starts?
Yeah, apparently he's ahead of schedule. That's what we've been getting, you know, the last month or so from Brian Callahan. I don't know exactly what he's doing, you know, because he was still in the process of working towards running. When I talked to Brian Callahan at the league meeting, but it's still all a work in progress. He's still going through the recovery process. That's something actually we'll probably need to get an update when we talk to Callahan tomorrow at 9:30. So look for that question to be asked.
Now, Teron, you were there, you know, chronicling Brian Callahan's first year, being out there at practice, not necessarily chronicling it, but being out there watching him as he, you know, took the field as a first-year head coach, even in practice leading up to camp. Is there anything different about him and his coaching staff as far as their approach that you see that you didn't see last year?
No, there's nothing different so far, but, I mean, again, it's just one practice. Mm-hmm. And we've had conversations, you know, press conference and just other conversations, but there's nothing necessarily different, so to speak. But I know there are some things that Brian Callahan would like to have done different because he said as much. So, and it's just like anything, after you do it, you start to learn the ins and outs and where you could add a little more here and take a little away there.
Do you think he feel more confident in himself or a little bit more sure of himself? Do it seem that way?
No, it doesn't seem that way at all. He seems the same as far as the you know, the confidence and mindset and everything. Obviously, it's a bigger challenge, but, I mean, like, the challenge last year was, hey, look, you got this guy who could be a franchise quarterback. Shine him up, polish him, and allow him to be one. And we know that didn't work last year, so we'll see how it works this year. You know, with a number one overall pick, it's a lot different, though.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining us on D-Mace, Vangen, and Donick. Great stuff as always, TD. We'll chat next week.
All right, appreciate you guys.
Always a pleasure to talk to Teron Davenport. 615-737-1025. The Vandy boys, Willie Donick, they're in fuego. We will discuss Vanderbilt as the SEC tournament begins this week. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vangen, 1025, 1063. The game.
Against the monstrous 6'4", Braden Holcomb. The 1-2. That one is swung on. This one is driven. This is deep to left field, and it is gone! He did it again! Holcomb did it again! Vandy wins it! A walk-off three-run bomb by Braden Holcomb! This kid has got magic in that right-handed swing! Oh, goodness! Final score! 8-7! The Doors beat Kentucky!
Does that get you all riled up, Willie Donick? Get you jazzed up?
I was at that game. I was at it. That was just the beginning of the fun.
Three walk-off wins in three of their past four home games.
Yes.
For Vanderbilt. of course.
For Vanderbilt at home. So you Thursday night, Braden Holcomb, when he said he did it again, he hit a walk-off home run, two outs, two strikes, team behind, down to the last strike against Alabama 2 weekends before that, then did it again against Kentucky. The following night, Friday night, Jonathan Vastine, after they had blown a two-run lead in the top of the ninth and they were down 8-7, hit a two-run homer to end game two of the series. So a third consecutive home walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth. And then the following game on Saturday, they were only behind 3-0 and came from behind to win 5-3. R.J. Austin got the go-ahead hit, I think, in the seventh inning. But it was it's quite a roll that they're on right now. And in the backdrop of all of this, and D-Mace, you can probably remember when they lost last year, mm-hmm. they were 2-out in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They were not a number one seed. They went on the road. They really sagged. I think they were 13-17 in the SEC, which, of course, the SEC is so tough. You can be pretty good and still be 13-17. But there was a lot of questions mm-hmm. of, oh, look at Tennessee rising. Mm-hmm. Look at Vanderbilt sinking. And so early in the year, I think there were still questions about this team, how good they were. And now they're on this run. And, man, is it ever a fever that's going on right now. I think even some skeptical fans are like, wow, can I start getting excited about this? Do they have a chance to get to Omaha? I think there was a lot of skepticism, but they've answered a lot of the critics. But you remember those times,
no,
right?
No, yeah.
There was some pretty, even to a point
where it was like, are you not questioning Korbs and
right.
his ability to coach this team?
And remember how offended I got mm-hmm. by the notion, like with all that, of course, I played, for those that are newer, I played for Vanderbilt baseball before Tim Corbin. Mm-hmm. And Vanderbilt baseball went through a lot. We had some okay teams. We weren't bad, but... And only 48 teams got to the tournament back when I was playing. But there was a long drought of about 25 or 30 years where they did not get to the NCAA tournament. So after what Tim Corbin did, to me, it was you do not question Tim Corbin in any way. It was absurd to say, hey, should he be on a hot seat or is the game passed him by? None of that was fair. But I understood when you've been to the top of the mountain, and that is – a source of so much joy for Vanderbilt fans, especially given how tough it is in some of the other sports mm-hmm. to succeed at that level. There was a lot of disappointment, like, oh man, is this window closing? But you see by having a little bit of confidence that he'll figure it out, they've made some adjustments through the NIL and the transfer that everybody's had to make.
So as you mentioned, Willie, the role that the Commodores are on, they won 4 of their last 5 series in 12 of their final 16 SEC games, capped off with a sweep of Kentucky at Hawkins Field over the weekend. The SEC tournament starts this week. Vanderbilt will be the number 4 seed in the tournament. They open play Thursday against either number 5 seed Georgia, number 12 seed Oklahoma, or number 13 seed Kentucky. Now, Willie, for those who haven't been paying attention, the format of the SEC tournament has changed, yes?
It's changed a number of times since, for example, I played in the first, and this is how old I'm getting, D-Mace. I played in the first tournament held at the stadium that they still hold the tournament in, the Hoover Met. It used to be called the Hoover Met. Now it's Regents Bank Park, I think it's called. It's in Hoover, Alabama, right outside of Birmingham, mm-hmm. and it's a great Double-A stadium. It doesn't host the Double-A team anymore, but it's a really nice, perfect spot to have the tournament. I play there in 1990. They've done different things. They've had only the top 8 teams make it. They've had, for a period of time, they took the East and the West divisions and had them play their own 16 tournament, which was weird. I didn't like that, so that didn't last very long. Mm-hmm. Then they went back to 8. Then some years it's been bring everybody. But this year, for the first time, I believe that they've ever done it this way, they're allowing all 16 teams to come, even Missouri, who went 3-27
oh, wow.
in the league.
Yikes.
And they're playing single elimination, but the advantage you have is the higher you finish in the standings, you get a bye.
It feels like the SEC men's basketball tournament.
It's a lot. It's a page out of that book. It's a very similar format. So the top four teams, and so Vanderbilt's sweep got them into the top four, which gives them a double bye. But it's only single elimination. So you could go down there and only play one game. Yeah. Whereas if it went back in the days of double elimination, in preparation for A, trying to win the tournament, which is there's prestige winning the SEC tournament, Vanderbilt in 2019 won the SEC tournament and won the national championship. Tennessee last year won the SEC tournament and won the national championship. But I could also cite examples of a team that didn't look very good in the SEC tournament, lost early, and still did great in the national tournament.
Do you think it's better because they're not playing as many games?
I think it's a double-edged sword. You can certainly rest some guys, and maybe your pitchers get a chance to maybe recharge the batteries if you want to do it that way. But what you may not have by playing less games is to get some other guys who maybe haven't pitched as many innings some great experience, because in these regionals.
But shouldn't it help you in the NCAA tournament? Because you hadn't played so many games. It was before it was a double elimination. You ended up playing more games. Whereas now, single elimination, you head into the tournament, the big tournament, you hadn't played as many games.
I think different coaches would give you a different answer.
Okay.
I think the benefit of playing a lot of games is you can use some pitchers who, with maybe if you know your team's going to be in the NCAA tournament, win or lose, you can try some pitchers that you might need in the very important games that you haven't had to use much, but you might very well need that guy in a close game that goes to extra innings, or if you get in the loser's bracket and you burn a lot of pitchers, you might need that guy. And if he's had a big performance in the SEC tournament, or a guy who maybe has struggled some is all of a sudden getting hot and gaining confidence, that guy could play a big role. So the pitching, to me, is the big part of it. The position players, probably, there's just as much benefit of not playing a whole lot of games.
The latest projection for the College World Series tournament on USA Today has Vanderbilt as a sixth seed nationally, hosting, of course, a regional at Hawkins Field against Southern Miss, East Tennessee State, and Tennessee Tech.
So the key is, if you're, and I think they have locked this down with that sweep, their RPI and strength of schedule is top three. And they've lost too many games, I think, to be the number one overall seed. Or
which
the
will probably
two.
Be Texas.
Yes. But what I think is the best thing to keep in mind is if you're in the top eight, and I think they're safely now in the top eight, even if they lost their first game down in Hoover, they've got it locked up. So that means you will play at home as long as you're in. And there's a big advantage. That is the road. The best road to Omaha is hosting the regional and the super regional. It hasn't happened every time Vanderbilt's been to Omaha. They have had to win a super regional on the road to get there. But it is a big advantage, I think, to play in your home park, and they've earned that home field advantage.
And if Vanderbilt wins its first game on Thursday, they are probably looking at a showdown against Texas in the second game, or their second game of the SEC tournament.
And they haven't played Texas. So, because we're 16 teams, this is to me why you should never have a 16-team college league. But there's a lot of teams you don't play. So Vanderbilt did not play Texas. They also didn't play Missouri. So that would have been
the
best and the worst. So you kind of, it's like one of those, you throw out the best and the worst. But they but I think from a scouting standpoint, it might be interesting to match up with Texas to see how your lineup looks against their guys. Texas, you said, has probably got an inside track to the number one overall seed.
I would say so.
Yeah,
I was reading Aria Gerson in the Tennessean. She chronicles the Commodores. How's that for alliteration? She chronicles the Commodores on a regular basis. And she said that the season turning point was a 14-0 loss at Oklahoma on April 12th. Why was that game, Willie, the put up or shut up game for the Commodores? Because from there, they went on the run that they've been on right now.
At that point in the season, I think they looked, I think a lot of people were concerned that their talent level was at a point where, in the backdrop of this is how tough it is to win on the road, right? Especially in the league. You can look bad on the road in the SEC. I don't really know why that is, but it seems like it's really pronounced. It's kind of like college basketball. Mm-hmm. You're much more likely to go on the road and get smoked than you are getting smoked at home.
Yeah.
And I think baseball has some of that. But you have the real good teams, the legit teams, can go on the road and win in the league. And when they lost that game at Oklahoma 14-0, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, is this still a good team but can be exposed, especially when they're playing really good teams on the road? It happened to them a lot last year. They were going on the road and getting smoked. But they recovered and won the last game in that weekend series. And from then on, they have really gradually improved. They're hitting a lot more home runs. That has been a big reason. And their pitching staff seems to get better each week. And they don't have these headliners like David Price or Sonny Gray, guys that you kind of knew were going to be high first-round picks when
Kumar
the season
Rocker.
Started. Kumar Rocker, Jack Leiter. Yeah. They've had a long, long line of them over the years. I don't know that this staff has that guy, at least certainly not at the beginning of the season. They've had some guys, though, that have put together some really good seasons. We talked to Sawyer Hawks. I don't know if I would call them their closer, but he's one of their top relievers. And I think they've all improved from last year to this year to where, like, the Tennessee series is probably the number one example of them going into a hornet's nest where if you don't have it together on the mound, you're going to give up 10 runs because Tennessee just absolutely carves up teams mostly. But their pitching staff was good enough to go into that building and hold their own and win 2 out of 3. I think that is a big confidence boost.
Ricky on the text line says, Corbs is the best NCAA coach, period. The benches clearing versus Vols changed the season. They grew up at that moment.
Well, that was an interesting moment. But that, and if they meet again, you're going to see a clip of that, right? But it's one of the most fun rivalries in the SEC in any sport, especially as we sit here in Nashville. But the animosity and the divergent approach, is that the right word? There's one end of the spectrum of how the game should be played.
Divergent works.
Tennessee plays one way. Vanderbilt is on the complete other end of the spectrum. So the two teams could not be more different with how they go about it when they take the field. One team, I call it, and this is a compliment, all right? I'm not trying to make a dig here because I think they wear it. They own it. They're Cobra Kai. If you've seen The Karate Kid,
yes,
they're Cobra Kai. Sweep the leg. Yeah. And not, I'm not saying they try to injure the other team like they did in that. That's not what I mean. But I'm thinking also the series. You ever watch the Netflix series Cobra Kai?
Mm-hmm.
Where Johnny Lawrence kind of becomes and Daniel LaRusso, they both kind of use little pieces of the other. And they kind of grow, and it's quite interesting. And there's a lot of karate fights in the mall.
Yeah.
And karate fights at the school, which makes for very entertaining.
Who doesn't love to have a karate fight at the mall?
You got
to
develop
and after
in your
a while, it kind of gets old a little bit. But it's,
we've all been there.
You got to develop in your karate,
it
man.
It kind of jumps the shark after a while. But it's an intriguing take on that.
How about a breakdance fight at the mall? Is that better?
But Tennessee is Cobra Kai, right? They're going to talk trash. They're gonna try to intimidate you. They're going to come at you. And they're going to be bravado about it. Vanderbilt is not like that. And so there are a lot of recruits in this state, in this middle part of the state in particular, that both coaches will recruit because both programs want to have the best players in Tennessee. And they both get outside of the state quite a bit as well. But I think particular for youth baseball and high school baseball around here, you're watching very closely both programs who both have won a ton of games, and they've won national titles. It's where you want to play. But if you're getting recruited by both, you have a very clear choice of what environment you're going to have when you're in the dugout.
Okay, you're a son. You're a father of a son that plays baseball. Excuse me. Well, you are
right.
A son. Your dad probably plays baseball,
son,
too.
He's
yes,
a father.
Exactly. So technically, yeah.
He's a
but
cousin.
You are a father of a son that plays baseball.
He's an uncle.
Which sort of approach do you think these younger players like? Is it more, and it could be UT, it could be Vandy, but just the contrast of coach, like one team seems to have more bravado than the other team. Which way are kids sort of leaning toward? And it could be Vandy and Ole Miss or Michigan State and somebody. which do they lean toward? The more bravado coach and team, or the more, you know, this is the way we're going to win?
It's a great – I don't know that it's a clear-cut answer. Uh-huh. But most – I think it depends on who has taught you mm-hmm. how to play. There was a great question that somebody asked on – because they were basing it on – if you watch the Vanderbilt-Tennessee series, mm-hmm. there was a home run trot by – I think they played a couple games since then, but I think Fisher leads the SEC in home runs for Tennessee. He hit a bomb in the first inning. It was a tape measure. Mm-hmm. Blasted it off the scoreboard, no doubter. And he let everybody in the park know about it. He yelled every Vanderbilt player on the diamond as he went around the bases. It was unbelievable. But a question was asked when people were kind of commenting on that. And the announcers, this was Jackie Bradley Jr., the former South Carolina great who played for the Red Sox for a long time, was in the booth with the ESPN announcers. And they were commenting on, hey, mm-hmm. this is the way you play. There's going to be a response. How do you react? But the question that people were asking is, when you do that, mm-hmm. is Tennessee recruiting that type of kid?
Mm-hmm.
Or when they get to campus, do they sort of
mold him
go into
that.
The Cobra Kai? And yeah. this is the Cobra Kai part for me, because it's the way you're taught the game.
Yeah.
There probably are some youth league teams that are taught to – to me, having fun and being enthusiastic, that's one thing. But when you taunt the other team, trash talk the other team, try to engage the other team, mm-hmm. that's a different level that you see in most than most baseball. It's an unconventional way to teach the game.
Vanderbilt opens its SEC tournament on Thursday against Georgia, Oklahoma, or Kentucky. We'll find out. We don't know who they're going to play yet. But they open the Commodores, that is, open the SEC tournament on Thursday. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. We'll bring in Jared Stillman, Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Dunnick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Stillman and Company coming up next at 2 o'clock. But we welcome in Jared Stillman. Hello, Jared.
Oh, gentlemen, how was your weekend? It's good to be on the program. I see Derrick Henry signed a new contract extension today, held a press conference. After all you people, Willie, your stats told me, your analytics told me Tajay Spears was better than Derrick Henry. And now he's signing another contract extension, which makes me very sad.
That is 100% incorrect and twisted. Twisted.
Boy, oh boy, twisted. You love twisting those things.
But I will say that I was in the camp that Derrick Henry was on the downslope, but we did say this, mm-hmm. D-Mace, that we felt that him going to the Ravens mm-hmm. gave him a unique opportunity because the defenses could not key on him, and it worked beyond my wildest expectations. I did not see that. I still believe that I don't think Derrick Henry mm-hmm. would have had a 1,900-yard season.
No, he wouldn't have.
If he stayed with the Titans.
No. The best thing he did was leave here for his career. Now, he's going to come back, and I'm sure they're going to do everything they needed to do for him. But as far as his career, because of where this team was and still is, the talent-wise, we were not going to be able to appreciate his greatness, how many more years he would have played here. Why? Because the team, he would have been carrying the team.
So, Jared, I want an honest answer here. Were you outraged when the day you found out that the Titans were moving on from Derrick Henry? Because I honestly do not remember it being an unbelievable, how could they do this kind of thing in the moment?
Well, they had telegraphed it the whole time.
I mean, so there was a buildup to it, I agree. But was there outrage from you? Were you saying, this is a huge mistake, they shouldn't do this, they should have brought back Derrick Henry? Because I don't remember you, or any of us really, saying that.
I was very disappointed that they didn't bring back Derrick Henry, only because I felt like Derrick Henry, everybody kept telling me, Jared, you can see he's still not the king anymore. He's not this. And I'm like, but the offensive line is so bad. It's so bad. And I felt like at the time they were going to go forward with Levis. We all knew that. And I felt like the best thing that could help out the young quarterback at that time would have been to, A, rely on Derrick Henry, and B, to have defenses forced to stop Derrick Henry to maybe try to help out the young quarterback. I mean, I felt even when the Titans weren't good in 2022, where Derrick almost won the rushing title in 2023, like their best offense was either giving it to Derrick or faking it to Derrick and then throwing the ball. And I didn't think that you get better by getting rid of good players. I mean, I remember last year, for instance, I was in Toronto at a wedding, and the people that were getting married live in Nashville, and so there were a lot of Nashville people there, and this was after the Seattle practices, and someone came up to me and said, oh, we're going to be better this year. You just don't understand. And I was like,
so you think
well,
they should have kept
them in practice.
You think
yes,
they should have kept
them?
Why?
I was very adamant.
No,
about
no,
it.
Why?
You think they would have won more games? They would have been in a better position if
yes.
they had kept him?
Because I don't think you get better by getting rid of good players. And I think Derrick Henry is still
did,
a very was good
he,
player.
Was, were, did they get better while he was here, like those last couple of years?
No, but they were
no,
a
they
better
didn't.
Team than they were last year because Derrick Henry was on it. I mean, they almost
only works in horseshoes
with
and
Josh
hand grenades.
Dobbs. Right, but again, we're trying to discuss whether or not uh-huh. Derrick Henry is valuable. Not
no, no, I'm
whether
not saying...
or not they won. Or they, the team was so freaking bad. And yet Derrick Henry still, with Josh Dobbs at quarterback, mm-hmm. almost carried that team to the division title. Derrick Henry is still a very, very
What happened
very
this
good
last
player.
Year?
He still ran the ball better than anybody
no, no,
else
no,
could
I'm
run
saying,
the ball here.
I'm saying the team-wise. I never
– The team
even,
sucks.
No, no, even
because
when,
the team sucks.
No, no, even when Derrick Henry – what did I say, Willie? I said Derrick Henry will rush for 1,500 yards when he goes to Baltimore. He will consistently be a 1,500-yard – I didn't think he declined as a player. This team declined, and with him on it, was only right. going to be bad for him.
Okay,
so what they need to do is they need to get mm-hmm. Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. They are again, you need to keep Derrick Henry, and then get the team around Derrick Henry to be better. That's what you need to
it
do.
It was going
to
take some years, and about time they got good, Derrick Henry was going
to
be done.
Okay, they wanted to do that with Steve.
Exactly.
Willie yeah. wanted me to find some receipts, so I did. Which one backs up Jared's claim from September 30th, 2024. Derrick Henry still has it, and I tried to tell you, and you all told me he wasn't the same. He
but
still
that's
got
September 30th.
It, and your
I want to know what it was in May.
Well, I'll have to look that up, but here's September 6th, 2024. Watching Derrick Henry in a Ravens uniform last night was foul. Also, I felt vindicated that Derrick Henry wasn't really that good of a fit for the Ravens because he doesn't help Lamar Jackson when Lamar has to play catch-up versus the best quarterbacks in the AFC.
He's a
perfect
fit.
I am still
fit.
Worried about that, by the way.
How? Why?
When he gets into one of these playoff games. Now, look, Mark Andrews dropped the ball last year, and I can't put that on Lamar. But that when Lamar gets into a shootout, you know, like Brady, we remember all of the games that Brady won, but how many did he come back where the Patriots were down and it was 14 points in the last 2 minutes? You know, the 28-3, whatever. When that game happens, Derrick goes to the bench. And I think Lamar needs help.
Whoa,
for
whoa,
those
whoa, whoa,
moments
whoa, whoa, whoa.
When the ball is in his hands, more so than when they have the lead and they can just bludgeon you to death with who's got the ball, Derrick, Lamar, you don't know, you can't tell.
But that was that was an issue with the Titans, too, taking him off the field on third down,
sure.
which they mostly did.
So right? it would have never mattered whether he was here or in Baltimore. He would
have
been taken off
the
field. The
Titans would have won the Super Bowl if Derrick Henry was on the team last year.
No,
I'm
not saying
that. You're a better football team with Derrick Henry, and I just don't believe that you get better by getting rid of good players. It's like Simmons. Titans fans are sick of Simmons, and they want to get rid of Simmons, and they're like, we should trade Simmons because they're tired of his crying like a crybaby. And I'm like, even though I don't really particularly care for Jeffrey Simmons' brand of crybabying, and I can tell you Jeffrey Simmons does not care for me. I do not want them to trade Jeffrey Simmons because the second you trade Jeffrey Simmons, now you have to go get a player like Jeffrey Simmons to replace Jeffrey Simmons. You don't get better by getting rid of good players.
All right.
And Derrick was a good player.
Jared, I do want to ask you this. Your girlfriend, Lindsay, is a proud Canadian. How is the Stillman household doing today following the Toronto Maple Leafs' 6-1 loss last night in Game 7?
So we were at a Canadian wedding last night.
Yes,
there
you
were a lot of NHL dignitaries that were in attendance.
A Canadian wedding on the night of a Game 7 with the Leafs.
Was the game on somewhere at the wedding?
Well, today is Canada Day. So, yes. And I'm learning about this. Apparently, or maybe this isn't Canada Day.
Canada Day is in July.
Yeah, Canada Day is July 1st, I believe.
Today is a certain kind of Canadian holiday that I've just learned about. It's like their Memorial Day is today. So that's why the Canadian wedding
was
last night because
Day.
Everybody else has
that's right.
Okay, get that one. So they all have today off. I would say that it was more – I think it was kind of more acceptance when it came to the Leafs around the Canadian crowd than surprise. You know, I thought what happened to the Leafs last night was what was going to happen to them in Game 6. I was shocked with the testicular fortitude that they played with on Friday night, because I'm used to the Leafs puking all over themselves like they did last night in Game 6. They gave me hope in Game 6 that they were going to show up in Game 7, and it was a disaster. You know, people don't talk enough about this. I mean, I guess it's because I don't know how many people in everybody's orbit cares about the little individual details of this. But that cheap shot on the Toronto goalie early in the series, to me, that probably swung the series in
favor. He also did take a shot to the face mask as well. So that he did take the elbow from Sam Bennett, but before that he took a shot to the face mask, which probably
contributed
made things
possibly,
worse
yeah.
as well. But Jared, you have mentioned, while lamenting the state of the Titans, that you wonder if you're going to let your little one grow up to be a Titans fan. Any reservations from your girlfriend to let him root for the Maple Leafs one day?
I don't think it's about that as much as it is about me. You know, if you're a Predators fan, and while the Predators had a nice little run there, I think the expectation for what Predator fans expect out of the Predators compared to what Maple Leaf fans expect out of the Leafs are very, very different. And I told somebody at this wedding last night who said to me, you know, are you Canadian? Because there was kind of like a Canadian side and American side. I was like, actually, I'm not, but I'm on the Canadian side. And I said, you know, my son might end up being a Leafs fan because the Preds aren't very good. But I don't know if I can afford the therapy that my son may have to go through if he decides to become a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. Imagine a Titan fan and a Maple Leaf
Ooh,
fan.
That's a,
I don't know.
That's a rough
that.
Existence, my friend.
And son of you.
And your son.
God,
that too.
Goodness, man.
That'll do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company coming up next.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful Monday. Peace.